Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will take place on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. The meeting will include a state of the station presented by KBOO's Board of Directors and an opportunity for members to meet the candidates running in the board election. KBOO will introduce its 2026 to 2027 operating plan and will present its first Diane Carl Mentorship Award. New directors will be announced at the meeting, followed by a musical performance by Mr. Vail's math class. Again, KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue. Doors open at 11 a.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/board25.
KBOO is loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you. Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Tabor Space, presenting their End of Summer Fest benefit concert Sunday, September 21st, from 1 to 7 p.m. The event will feature an afternoon of live music and a craft fair. Tickets and info at taborspace.org.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. Tonight we'll be discussing the public response to the recent mass shooting in Minneapolis and how it is affecting the trans community. So let's go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Nicolette and I use they, them pronouns.
My name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns.
I'm Sheila and I use she and her pronouns.
Great. Welcome, everyone. So to give a bit of backstory, on August 27th, a mass shooting occurred at the Church of Annunciation in Minneapolis during a Catholic school mass, which killed two children and injured 21 other people. The shooter then fatally shot themselves, and ever since there's been speculation about the shooter's gender identity and motivations behind the shooting. The shooter was identified as 23-year-old Robin Westman, who had no prior criminal history. Westman appears to have identified as transgender at some point, as they had previously legally changed their name and gender marker, but later wrote in a diary entry that they were, quote, tired of being trans and wished they had never brainwashed themselves. This supports the idea that Westman was possibly a detransitioner, but whatever their identity may have been, this rhetoric has once again riled up transphobes, calling being trans a delusion and a mental illness. Many transphobes, including public figures and politicians, are citing this and other shootings where the shooter may have possibly been trans as a pattern and evidence that trans people are mentally ill, with some even calling for anyone who identifies as trans to be locked up or executed. Which, of course, this makes no sense when by far the vast majority of mass shooters have been cisgender and most commonly cis men. So do either of you have any thoughts or any more information to share?
Would you like to start, Sheila?
Well, the obviously, this is a remarkable gift to anti-trans rhetoric, because they can shift the ground from transgender people being victims of violence to being not either instigators of violence, or that there's something innate in so-called gender ideology that is inherently violent or creates a propensity towards violence. The fact that in this case the person was giving some evidence of a desire to detransition rather than affirm their trans identity certainly calls into question, if they want to parse it very carefully, to say the problem was not that they were trying to act according to their gender of choice, but that instead they were having thoughts of reasserting an artificial male identity, which in some way was associated with violence or weapons. And if you look at the broad spectrum of school shootings, the one factor that seems to be in play is outsiders, oftentimes bullied outsiders, oftentimes people having trouble coming to terms with themselves in larger areas than just their gender confusion or their gender orientation. And what seems to be very much present is a propensity to want to appear in a very martial guise, some even wearing fatigues and things like that, going over the top, not just having guns, but having various incendiary devices. And in this case, having such a broad spectrum, such a broad spectrum of causes that were being asserted in the so-called manifesto, that they were drawn from such a wide spectrum that it was almost impossible to pin anything down as forming a cohesive pattern. It was almost as though the person was saying, I'm against this, against this, against this, against this. And there seemed to be a certain resentment against the Catholic Church. There was certainly a feeling that, in addition to wanting to kill in some way, almost the feeling I had was that maybe it was saying, well, one of the phrases was, where is your gods? More or less implying why didn't God step in and stop me from doing this terrible thing that I'm doing? In other words, it was almost as though there was a certain daring quality to this, as though the person was saying, I'm going to put myself in this position, but why doesn't God stop me? In other words, the general impression was of almost psychotic dimensions to this, and yet the letter left for the person's family seemed very calm, even loving, even caretaking, but it did not really clarify the motive for why this was even happening in the first place. So with so much smudginess to take this one instance and make it dispositive as setting up a whole paradigm for school shooters rather than being something on the outer fringes of even the general run of school shootings makes it such an idiosyncratic instance that to try to get any traction from this to come after the transgender community is absolutely absurd.
So I'd like to talk about this, but I'm going to be going at it from a little bit different direction. It may not be the direction that we were expecting for this conversation. So first of all, I'd like to compare the rates of homicide in the United States versus in Europe by gun deaths. So in the United States in 2021, which was the most recent year I could gather data for, the average rate of firearm homicide in the US was 4.52 per 100,000, which is among the 10 highest rates in the world. The average rate in Europe for the same period of time was 0.19 per 100,000. That means that the average rate of death by gunfire by homicide in Europe was 22 times smaller than in the United States. So if you are a European citizen, your chance of dying by gun violence is 1/22 or 0.04% of what your rate is in the United States. Obviously, this has a lot to do with school shootings. I mean, the fact that there's a long history in the United States of efforts at trying to block these efforts at gun control are the reason that we have school shootings. Now, in my mind, this is another school shooting by another white person who may have identified as male or may have identified as female. It's not really relevant. The fact is that this person, besides the fact that at a certain time they had a little bit of an overlap with transgender identity, besides that little bit of an overlap, they fit into the demographic of a long list of school shooters who had easy access to guns. And I just like to read you the last 10 school shootings that have been done by white men under the age of 25. We had Sandy Hook in December of 2012. 26 children were killed by Adam Lanza, who was a 20-year-old white male. In April 1999, Columbine High School, 13 students were killed by Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, who were two young white men, ages 18 and 17. In 2018, at Santa Fe High School, Dimitrios Pargotsis shot and killed 10 students. At Umpqua Community College, right here in Oregon, we may or may not remember, this happened in 2015 during the Obama administration. Christopher Harper Mercer killed 9 students, and he was 26 years old. So there's 4. There's been several others since then. In the case of this shooting, there were 2 students killed. So it was not as bad as the worst ones, but it was really terrible. I'd also like to discuss Democratic efforts at gun control in Congress and Republican efforts to suppress gun control, because this is something that's been going back 35 years. And this is just, like, in my mind, this isn't a transgender story. This is yet another story of the failure of the United States Congress to protect our children. It's the Republicans. This falls squarely on the back of the Republicans, the Republican administration, the Republican House, the Republican Senate, and the Republican president, who have been working systemically for the last 40 years to enable young white men to walk into Walmart, buy an AK-47, walk out of Walmart, walk down to their nearest grade school or preschool or kindergarten and shoot it up with 100 rounds of ammunition, everything legally purchased at Walmart, thanks to Republican efforts to make this possible. And that's because they're for having free and easy access to AK-47s and rapid-fire assault rifles, and children as young as 18 years old being able to just walk into Walmart and buy these assault weapons that are made for the military that they can go and then shoot children with. So I just want to talk for a minute about the history of Democratic efforts at gun control in Congress and Republican efforts at trying to stop those. In the 1990s, we had the Brady Bill. That was in 1993. It was introduced by Chuck Schumer, who is right now the speaker. He's the minority whip in the Senate. I think that's the right. Is that the right term, Sheila, the minority whip? Or is that for the House? Anyways, Chuck Schumer. Anyways, Chuck Schumer's Chuck Schumer's the leader of the Democratic contingent in the U.S. Senate right now. So Chuck Schumer introduced the Brady Bill. This was after then we had the federal assault weapons ban in 1994. This was actually passed as part of larger crime legislation, which I personally had a problem with. But the federal assault weapons ban that was passed in 1994 was a really great idea. It expired, unfortunately, in 2004, and it has failed attempts to renew it. Now, I don't know why Congress passed a bill where they would ban assault weapons that had an expiration date. I really don't understand the logic of that. I mean, it seems to me that there should just be a permanent ban on assault weapons. In the early 2000s or the early 2010s, during Democratic control of Congress in the Obama years, unfortunately, no major gun legislation passed. In fact, some gun rights expanded, such as allowing firearms in national parks and on Amtrak. So the Democrats really lost a big opportunity when they had control of the House and the Senate to actually pass gun control legislation. In the early 2000s to early 2000, in 2013, after Sandy Hook, I know we all remember, if we were old enough to remember it, Sandy Hook, which is really one of the most horrifying moments in the history of this country. Following Sandy Hook, Dianne Feinstein introduced the assault weapon ban of 2013, but it did not pass in the Senate, losing by a vote of 40-60. Again, this falls specifically in the hands of the Republicans. 2015 and 2016, Democrats proposed a no-fly, no-buy legislation after the San Bernardino and Orlando nightclub shootings, which we haven't mentioned yet, but in Orlando, 49 gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people were murdered by one person using an assault weapon, a rapid fire assault weapon. These people who were murdered were then honored through many ways of honoring them, including having a rainbow colored crosswalk at the site of the mass murder, which the governor of Florida and the Florida House and Senate recently approved erasing that monument, erasing that rainbow colored crosswalk, which has already been painted over and turned back into just black and white. So, you know, this is the depth to which the Republican Party has sunk. You know, this would be like if for instance, we had a memorial to the Jews who died in the Holocaust, and there was some kind of a memorial set up. Like in Europe, for instance, there's a tradition of putting stumbling stones in different places to help you remember the Holocaust, and it's a way of acknowledging places where Jews were murdered. It would be as if the government in that country said, oh, we're going to remove everything that's a memorial to the Holocaust. So if there's something here that reminds you that Jews were murdered at this place, we're going to take away that because that's woke. And that's exactly what the Republicans just did in Florida. And it's just completely heinous. I mean, I can't think of anything more disgusting than the Republican Party deciding to erase a memorial to people who were mass murdered by assault weapons. These same administrations, there's more handguns and there's more assault weapons, there's more rifles in this country than there are people. And there's no other country like this in the world. This is an insane country. It's gun crazy. And this is just the latest in a long, long line of mass murders that have happened. So that's what I have to say for right now. Who'd like to go next?
I just wanted to add that you... Oh, can I just say one thing real quick?
Absolutely.
I'm glad that you brought that up, Emma, because I'm still trying to find the exact quotes, but I recently saw at least one or two politicians claim that in response to the Minneapolis shooting, oh, guns aren't the problem. Mental illness is the problem. You know, alluding to trans people being mentally ill, of course, that we're the problem, not guns. Even though, like you brought up, in countries that have more gun control, the homicide rates are far, far lower than they are in the U.S. So clearly guns are the problem. And Republicans are just doing anything they can to prevent gun control legislation. I'm going to extreme lengths to do so. Sorry, go ahead, Sheila.
So it's always very upsetting when a community that has an annual Remembrance Day for the numbers of us who are killed and murdered in various ways, to try to see a narrative shifted on us where we are the malefactors when we disproportionately are the victims of violence, not only in schools, but everywhere, and are a massively underemployed. And I think many of us have gone into sex work largely because it's been hard to get people to hire us. And at this particular late stage, it's unbelievable that degree of discrimination is still out there. But the big thing to look at here is to realize what a beneficial thing this is for an anti-trans narrative, because it gets to combine several different factors. The transgender community is being portrayed as anti-religion, anti-Catholic, anti-schools, in other words, school shooters. And in addition to all of that, we're being portrayed as mentally unstable and inherently dangerous, and part of an ideology that lends itself to domestic terrorism. In other words, even without action, we're perceived as being a threat just by virtue of being who we are. Of course, one of the problems with trying to arrest people for crimes that they might commit is our entire legal system is not based upon what people might do, but what they actually have done. But there has been a suggestion that if transgender ideology is itself a sort of a terrorism along the lines of the drug cartels or along the lines of any other clearly identifiable movement, that the movement itself can be seen as being suspect, much like Antifa or something like this. And so the idea is you could be a person who is a transgender enabler, i.e. a doctor, a professional, a psychologist, And the more logical thing for them to do if they wanted to come after the community would be to say, well, you have to, if you happen to have a transgender patient, you have to have a profile on them. And if they show any signs of danger, you have to give them, you have to put the government on notice. And we know that the cities of America are being turned into areas where certain groups are going to be targeted, starting with immigrants. But the idea of we're going to stop crime seems to imply that there's something that an army can do or the National Guard can do that ordinary police officers cannot do. Amongst those things are things like not giving people Miranda rights or not having badge numbers so you know who's arresting you. And so the idea that's alarming our community is, what if we become the targets? What if we become the new targets? Are they going to do sweeps? Are they going to pick up transgender sex workers just by standing on the street? Are they going to be looking in jails for people that are there for other reasons and say, well, if you're transgender, we're going to put you in a special prison? In other words, there's so many parallels to things we've talked about before about how a country can have certain targeted people. And it's very clear that the movement in the country, this federalization of law enforcement and this idea of how to marshal fear and hysteria to isolate groups and define them as being either dangerous or just essentially a public menace of some sort. And let's not lose sight of the fact that the targets so far have been largely Black cities. And so it's really clear that they're picking their cities very carefully. And this is a training exercise for them. When Americans get used to our cities being invaded by federal troops as a normal part of life, the idea is every American city is a target. And the people in the city could be people like us. And the final thing is this confusion of being on the spectrum of autism versus being transgender. Are they co-occurring instances? In other words, there's a lot of amateur psychologizing going on to say that maybe it isn't transgender people, maybe it's people who have autism that need to be targeted. But it's very clear that it's very smudgy, like I said. It's a word to just say that these definitions and even the concept of a distinctive transgender ideology is itself a smudgy concept. What is an ideology is by definition seen as something that has no scientific basis. It's just a set of beliefs that could be entirely fallacious. And so the idea is that what we're doing is we are undermining the family, undermining religion, basically hollowing out public security. And the only answer to that is not less guns, but more guns. Anyway, you get the whole spectrum of what I is talking about. So there we are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, first of all, I want to say, Sheila, that, you know, if I'm walking around on the street and somebody thinks, if they're like increasing the surveillance and like, you know, detaining people because they think they're transgender sex workers, like if somebody actually thinks I'm a transgender sex worker, like I'm actually like at least passable enough and hot enough.
Yeah, but they may come after, as I say, I'm a granny tranny, so they may come after.
Yes, exactly.
Granny tranny.
Here's what I wanted to say about that. I think that the shooter's trans identity is being used to drive anti-trans narratives. I mean, this really falls into a really nice synchronization with our show 2 weeks ago, because we just did a show 2 weeks ago that we finally aired. It was called Remembering Jamie Shoup. And we talked about Alyssa Rae Shoup's kind of complicated history as somebody who was the first person to get a non-binary driver's license in the state of Oregon, and then she detransitioned and became a he and went on this 3-year rampage kind of against the transgender community and really caused a lot of damage, and then retransitioned and became transgender female, and then eventually committed suicide. And we were kind of talking about how Jamie Shoup's, like, during the period when Jamie Shoup was detransitioning, the right wing really took advantage of her trauma at that time, because she was going through a lot of trauma, and a lot of issues were going on in her life because of, you know, not really having good access to the kind of medical treatments that she really needed. I mean, she was a veteran and she'd served our country. But the right wing took advantage of her during her moment of vulnerability, and, you know, used the kind of language that Jamie Shoup and Chloe Cole and Walter Heyer are using as really famous detransitioners to drive this right-wing agenda that isn't really about transgender issues at all. It's really about feeding the Republican hate machine. I mean, the same Republican hate machine that wants to allow young men to be able to easily buy assault weapons, who say that it's okay, go ahead, young white men, go ahead and buy assault weapons. What we believe in, we believe that that's your right as a young white man, is to go into a Walmart, buy assault weapons. And so that's the Republican values. And they're distracting this whole transgender issue. They're distracting it from, it's really a distraction from core issues. I mean, the president, it's in the Epstein files. Everybody knows it. It's just it's the biggest open secret. The emperor has no clothes. Donald Trump, there's photographs that can prove it. There's, you know, there's public statements from girls, the president of the United States. And this is a distraction from the fact that, so it's a distraction from core issues. Right-wing fingers have seized on the shooter's transgender identity to argue that issues around transgender issues these are causing this violence. If there was an ideology that was driving this young person, it would be Christian nationalism. Not that that person themselves was a Christian nationalist, but they really did sound a lot like a lot of other Christian nationalists I've heard lately, who talk about killing the Jews. You know, for a while, identify as transgender, but basically sounds to me just like a Christian nationalist, like a lot of other white male school shooters, honestly. So, you know, this is a distraction. It's really a distraction. Also, it's very, very rare for anyone, I mean, of the literally hundreds of school shootings that have taken place of the Republican Party and Republican legislators and Republican presidents, this culture of easy access to guns, even by people who we basically would classify as children, in their hands, because they're the ones who have been fighting for so long. You know, God only knows why Republicans think that it's important to protect. Who knows why they think that? Because recently, somebody who hates Democrats actually went to a bunch of state legislators' houses in the state of Minnesota and went around murdering state legislators, people who had actually been elected to serve in the state house and the state senate in Minnesota. And these people were being murdered by a Christian nationalist in the name of Christian nationalism, because these Democratic politicians happen to support women's rights. So there you go. That's who'd like to go next?
Oh, I'd like to Nicolette, but you haven't spoken for a little bit. Do you want to say something, Nicolette?
I mean, I'm not sure what to say at this point, because I feel like Emma's already covered it all.
Well, here's something to be thought about. The school shootings are so common in this country that although they appear in the news cycle for a week or so, after that they're history. And that's the sad cynicism of America, is that this is now such a normal occurrence that we're getting used to it. So if this lasts longer than the normal news cycle, that will be the best indication that it is not about the killing of the children. It's about finding a handy label to hang on the transgender community. The other thing that I'd like to say about this is that it's really clear that there is a phenomenon that makes school shootings more common than other crowd scenarios. There's lots of places where people gather, from malls to grocery stores, that have also been areas of mass shootings. But apparently churches and schools are a thing of choice. And part of that is that there seems to be a phenomenon of a trying to have a higher body count than the prior mass murderers. So this is becoming, in a sense, a fad amongst a certain people with a certain mentality. And that's something the psychologists should look at. They should say, why is it that schools are disproportionately chosen? Why is it that many of these people seem to have followed the records of other school shooters and have actually seen them as a sort of a weird peer group? And that there's an overlay that most of these people are not caught alive. Most of them do not try to escape. They do their carnage and then they kill themselves in the process. So there's also a clear overlap with self-destructive behavior. So if they really want to stop these things, since apparently the Congress is not able to restrict guns and they're not capable of keeping out these guns out of people's hands, or even limiting the type of weapon that the people have, the next thing is to try to come up with a preventive profile and then say, since it does seem to be young men that fit a certain profile that could be actually ascertained, maybe school counselors all around the country should say, let's look backwards and let's see if anybody is a current student or somebody that over time has been a victim of this type of bullying and may show up at a later date to wreak havoc upon the school, attacking more the school, and that the actual students are collateral damage. The real message seems to be one of alienation and revenge about things that have already happened, and a desperate plea for notoriety, which is runs all through our society. So there's no doubt that we are a really sick society, obsessed with records of various forms. And the mere fact that trans people are also targeted for school sports, where the number of people that are even in school sports are very small, and the number of people in school sports that are setting records are smaller still. So once again, we're looking at this whole thing about celebrity culture in our country. And this is just another kind of a Bonnie and Clyde approach to criminal behavior. That it, for instance, it never seems to really actually help the person that's committing the crime. This isn't like some great bank robber or some thief or something. The people that are committing the crime take care of their own execution. So there's something very sad and despairing in that showing up in young men. I think the real problem is, what unrealistic standards do we have for young men in our society, that if they don't think they can measure up to it, that they have to find some way to assert some sort of hyper-masculinity, which would be surprising when we have our president appearing in superhero guises that covers up his big fat tummy and his big fat behind and makes him look like he's Sylvester Stallone. So there's something very weird going on in America, and it does not have to do with feminism, and it does not have to do with male to female identification. It is just the opposite. It's an effort for young men to make some last desperate plea for masculinity in the most destructive way possible. And if that's what a man is, as opposed to being a good father or a good caretaker or a good and responsible citizen, then what kind of model do we have for masculinity in our society? Maybe that's what needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that does remind me of how I've been reading that the investigation into Westman has found that apparently this person was just absolutely, like, according to their internet history and everything, absolutely morbidly obsessed with mass shootings and specifically killing children. Like, they were very obsessed and fascinated with the idea of killing children specifically. And so, I mean, that is a mental health issue that needs to be addressed. And of course, the problem is we've got all these Republicans and general transphobes saying, oh, well, these two things that just happen to be occurring together, there must be a correlation, when it's a coincidence. If we look at the number of people that are obsessed with mass shootings and obsessed with killing children and such, what's the actual percentage of them that are trans? Like 0.000001%? There is no correlation there. It is a coincidence. So let's stop acting like being trans is the problem.
Exactly. So, you know, of mass shooters are nearly always cisgender men. 97.7% of all of the mass shooters in the United States are cisgender men. So if there's anybody who needs to be restricted from having handguns based on, or, you know, rifles or some automatic weapons based upon the demographic, it would be cisgender men. So that would be an easy way to solve the problem of gun violence in America. Just restrict ownership of guns to only, and you will solve the problem of mass shootings in America just by taking guns away from cisgender men who are responsible for 97% of all of the mass shootings in the United States. It's also important, mm-hmm. though, to look at the real issues. I mean, firearms policy access and policy failings are the reason that these shootings are happening. I mean, this is a person who, if they had not had easy access to firearms and to munitions, would not have been able to, perpetrate their crime. One of the things that we did see from this particular shooting was that the perpetrator assumed that they would be able to enter the facility and shoot the children from inside the facility. But because we've had training and have gotten educators aware of how to do mass shooting prevention, everything was locked up. And so this perpetrator was not able to access the facility. And so the number of deaths was actually greatly reduced because they were shooting blindly. They had no idea where the children were, what they were doing. They were shooting blindly, which is part of why I think they shot 116 rounds. So that's an example of when you actually put in a restriction, mm-hmm. it actually does save lives. Now, if you really want to save lives, restrict gun ownership, restrict sales of firearms. You know, that's really the way to do it. This was part of the way, was doing these exercises in the schools. But the next mm-hmm. way is to get the numbers down to the numbers that they are in Europe. You know, in Europe, there's still crazy people. I'm sorry, I shouldn't use that word crazy. There's people in Europe who want to mass murder people too, but they have to do it with knives or with automobiles or something that they can get their hands on. They can't do it with guns because it's really hard to get a gun in Europe. And so that's why the murder rate in Europe is 22 times less than it is in the United States. That means that for every one that happens in the, for every 22 that happen in the U.S., only one happens in Europe. So that's how much worse it is in the United States. Sheila?
Well, here's some things that we need to recognize, that the reason that we have this problem is we have this sort of fundamentalist concept of the Constitution, that somehow their Second Amendment is so sacred and was so important to the founding fathers, that if the ability of our law enforcement agencies to protect property and lives breaks down, everybody is going to have to adopt a sort of a Wild West attitude and then defend themselves. So that it isn't so much that the Republican Party is embracing the consequences of a fundamentalist position with regard to firearms, they would say, I'm sure, that they are not in favor of any of this, but they don't simply see any way around it without compromising the Second Amendment. And as they reviewed the law, they would understand, or if they read the amendment, they would recognize that it was set up so that the states would have the ability to have a militia to be able to have safeguard within the state itself and not be entirely dependent upon the federal government for law enforcement. And it also was the fear that any central authority, including the United States federal government, could become oppressive, and therefore the militias of the states could act as a way of having some resistance against a federal takeover where the states just didn't matter anymore and were no longer sovereign. It was not extended to private ownership until a Supreme Court case, and I don't remember the name of the case right now, but it can be looked up very simply. And so ever since then, it's opened up almost a field day for the gun manufacturers. And one of the strangest things is that if the right to carry arms is as sacred as they think it is, does that mean that, remember, when it was passed, you had muzzle loaders? You didn't have massive clips with all these things, let alone gun stocks that could transform them into machine guns. And if they really wanted to be consistent, they'd say, well, arms, I mean, what are other arms? Maybe bazookas, maybe flamethrowers, maybe hand grenades. I mean, should everybody have a right to carry literally anything that stands under arms? And now that we have drones that could go out and go down a trench and wipe people out in Ukraine, does everybody have a right to have a drone that's armed so that next school shooting won't even have rifles? Maybe what they'll do is have some drone come in, go over into a football stadium and go wiping people out in the front rows. Mm-hmm. In other words, there's no way to argue their position in a consistent fashion. So that's telling us that there's something wrong there. But once you opt into the mindset that something is a sacred constitutional right, and unfortunately the media has portrayed it in exactly that fashion, people feel helpless to make a change because they say, well, we can't do a thing until we amend the Constitution, which is practically impossible. So in other words, they perceive themselves to be victims of the government that they've sworn allegiance to, rather than people that have adopted an untenable, logically untenable position.
Mm-hmm. Well, y'all,
Can I just slightly tangent for a minute? And because that reminds me of how, like, I find it odd that Republicans claim they care so much about the Constitution, and that's why they're just so obsessed with defending the Second Amendment, when they clearly don't care about any of the other amendments. Even that freedom of speech they for a while were claiming to care so much about, with Trump now signing this executive order and all of his supporters, of course, you know, fully supporting it, that flag burning should be illegal, when the Supreme Court decided decades ago that flag burning was constitutional and upheld by the First Amendment because it is freedom of speech. And now Republicans are fighting to ban something that was declared constitutional. It just seems to me they don't actually care about the Constitution. So why are you using the Constitution as, you know, the basis for why you care so much about guns and are so against gun control? Exactly. Sorry, I just wanted to say that.
I have, let me answer a little bit of Nicolette on this idea of why it all depends upon one thing, the unitary executive theory, which says that all the power of the second branch of the government, after the Supreme Court and after the Congress, is literally the president in his own person. That's not the way signing statements and executive orders have usually been done. And the sheer number of them, many of which are under pending litigation, should show that this is like throwing a scattergun approach to the entire government and recreating it in a whole different model overnight. We're kind of off the charts at this point in this country, and the gun issue is a subset of a much larger issue of how do we understand the laws, which most people do not understand. You cannot just pick out the Constitution and read it and answer all these questions, or there wouldn't be any need to teach a 2,000-page course book in constitutional law if you're in law school. So it's really clear that and the media is really responsible for this misnomer of how they're presenting the Constitution.
Yeah, thank you for listening tonight, everyone. I know this has been very tough and dark subject matter, but we felt it was too important to not address. So thank you to everyone who tuned in tonight. Thank you for everyone who joined us in this conversation. You've been listening to Transpositive PDX. Thank you and have a good night.
Hi, this is Emma. I just want to thank you so much for listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. I just got back from the Grassroots Radio Conference. It was happening up in Spokane, Washington. It was this really incredible gathering of community broadcasters from around the country. KBOO has actually hosted the Grassroots Radio Conference. We hosted it back in 2018. And at this conference this year in Spokane, we had a chance to hear from FCC Commissioner Ana Gomez, who is a Democrat. And Ana gave a really great speech talking about how we really need to pay attention to the media landscape and the ongoing efforts, the intimidation that's been happening from the current administration, trying to bully broadcasters into basically saying what the administration wants them to say. We've seen that through the heavy-handed tactics of the current administration with CBS. And that same kind of attitude towards all broadcasters, including the elimination of funding for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting, has been an attempt to silence speech. And that's because the current administration only wants you to hear one kind of speech. But when we were together, when I was together this weekend with, there were three or four people from KBOO and people from all around the country at the Grassroots Radio Conference, I was able to see and I was reminded so well of how very, very important it is to have a diversity of voices. As you can hear when you listen to KBOO on any given day, the incredible diversity of voices that happens in this station. I mean, we have got radio here from, all across the spectrum and from underrepresented and voices that, have historically been disenfranchised from our society. And at KBOO, we really try to uplift those voices. And we also have this amazing music. I heard some great music when I was in Idaho. Betsy Rogue, Whiskey Trish, just really amazing women-produced music. KBOO, we have a little bit of everything. We've got jazz, we've got Spanish language programming, we have, programming from around the world. Sunday mornings, we have the Persian hour, we have the Jewish hour. You may not always agree with everything that you hear on KBOO. I mean, I'm a big fan of Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!, and I am so proud of the way that Amy Goodman has been covering Gaza. It may be a little bit challenging for you sometimes to hear about the genocide that's happening in Gaza. You know, this administration's really made it hard to acknowledge that, you know, Palestinian children are being starved to death by Israel. But, you know, KBOO, we make room for all voices, and especially we make room for that really critical truth that, you know, you can only speak when you actually have, when your First Amendment rights are actually being respected by your government. So KBOO is so valuable, especially right now. So I hope that you will consider giving to KBOO. I'm a big fan of KBOO. I give basically the equivalent of about 1 hour's wage a month. You know, give what you can and, you know, make a difference, because this is your community radio station. It's an absolute gem of a radio station. I can tell you, when I was in Spokane at the Grassroots Radio Conference, everybody knew about KBOO. I mean, the folks at WBAI in New York, KPFK, KPFA in San Francisco and Los Angeles, you know, and all these little stations around the country. And KYRS, the station, the community radio station in Spokane that's been operating for 22 years strong. It's actually run out of the library in Spokane. It's a great station. Oh my gosh, everybody there is just, they have this amazing space. But the folks at KYRS said, hey, when you go back to Portland, tell everybody at KBOO how grateful we are to KBOO, because we could have never gotten started without KBOO. So, I mean, not only is KBOO of strength and a voice right here in Portland, Oregon, but we're actually an inspiration to other stations around the country. And we have a long, long history of being an inspiration. So, anyways, these are just some. There are so many stories I heard when I was at the Grassroots Radio Conference. Another one was about the FCC case from 2006, the KBOO case, that, you know, was ground setting. KBOO was setting precedent for, you know, when the FCC tries to go after you. And KBOO was there. And, you know, KBOO has been here for 56 years. We've been here. So I hope that you'll consider giving to KBOO. You can give to us at kboo.fm and slash give. And I just, you know, as someone who has been here for the last 15 years, I love the station. I think it's great. People all around the country think KBOO is great. And with your support, we can keep on going. So thanks so much.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks,
McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors.
Your coworkers.
Your students.
Your customers.
And even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.